Hi there, this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast, I Want to Be A, where I interview high flyers from all industries to find out their journey, how they came to do what they do, what it's like to do their job, and then their advice for listeners wanting to follow in their footsteps. In this series, we cover everything from traditional careers such as accountancy through to the less traditional careers and future industries such as digital marketing and digital publishing. Today I have Nikki Bannerman in the studio. Nikki is so interesting because she's had what appears to be a really, really glamorous career in production of all things media. I say appears to be because if you talk to Nikki, she sort of doesn't think it is. But from the outside, you know, she's met so many celebrities. She's been involved in media right from the beginning with record producing, moving on to when it was cassettes and DVDs. And now she's actually a producer of a podcast series called The Influential Woman that I was lucky enough to be on a couple of weeks ago. And Nikki talks all about what it's like to work for a firm where you find yourself catapulted into this world of celebrity. She was in Hollywood, in Australia, all over the place. She even broke bands such as Boyzone. And yet, you know, she wasn't particularly academic, and this was not something that she decided she wanted to do right at the beginning. So Nikki, thank you so much for joining us. And
pleasure.
If we could start by finding out about your journey from when you were at school to where you are now. And there's many twists and turns, so do your best to take us through those.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity. Well, when I was about 15, I had several passions. I wanted to be a journalist and I wanted to work for the BBC. And I wanted to work with people that were really interesting or potentially famous. And I tried all of those avenues. I tried to get into the London College of Journalism, and because I hadn't worked hard enough at my O-levels, that wasn't the answer. I tried to work for the BBC. I wrote them a letter. I think I've still got the letter that I wrote, or the reply that I got. Again, I don't think I had the right skill set. And I did see an article in a magazine, one of the top London advertising agencies, where they were interviewing some very famous people at the time. And I phoned up. I'm not quite sure why, but I still remember being in my parents' bedroom, phoning up this guy and saying, I need to just talk to you about your article. And he's like, oh, yes. And I said, I thought it was fascinating. I loved the interview. I loved the storytelling. I loved the way that it had come across in the media. And he said, will you come and see me?
And you're only 15 at this point.
I was only 15. I was still at school. And he said, will you come and see me? And I said, yes, you know, and never did.
It's really interesting, isn't it? And I'm so glad that you've started off with that little story, because it ought to be a reminder to everybody not to be fearful about asking, because if you don't ask, you don't get. And very often you do ask. If you do ask, you can be hugely shocked about getting a positive reaction. So shocked in your case that you didn't believe them, you didn't take it up. But we'll come on to that.
Exactly. But following through, I think, is more... Not just ask, don't be afraid to ask, don't lack the confidence, never be too scared to ask, because having interviewed so many people since, I realise everyone's actually a bit afraid or a bit vulnerable or have got their stuff. But actually, if someone says, come and see me, then they're not going to say come and see me if they don't want you to come and see them.
No.
So go and see them.
So where did you go to school?
I went to school at a grammar school, which was an academic school in Kent.
Tell us about, you know, how it was for you at school.
It was very boring, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't work very hard. I wasn't overly interested, and I didn't revise probably at all for my O-levels, which I do not recommend now, neither to my teenage children or to anyone listening. But I think you find your own path, and actually I think, looking back now, I think it made me work harder to attain extra qualifications out of school
later
than I
on.
Probably would have done if I'd gone. I did want to go to university, and actually I do always say now I wish I'd gone to university, but I had a different path, and I actually, it was still quite interesting.
But while you were at school, you didn't waste time because you had a ton of different jobs, didn't you?
I did have a lot of jobs, actually.
Yeah.
I had a Saturday job when I was 13, and I worked out that you were only allowed to work for 4 hours at 13. So I decided to get one job from 9 till 12 in the morning, and then I had a lunch hour, and then I had another job for 4 hours in the afternoon at a different company, and I was doing really well, getting paid double the money at 13 and getting the bus and getting home, and until the son of the lady who's the job in the morning happened to come into the retail outlet I was working at in the afternoon. So I was hiding under the counter when I was at the till.
But you did jobs a lot in retail. You mentioned florists and things like that. And you were saying that besides getting the money, two lots of money, you actually acquired some skills that were very useful later on in your career.
Yes, I think probably looking back with that and with temping, having the ability to talk to people you don't know and to treat them as all the same and as humans, to find out what they're after. You know, I worked in a florist. It was quite beautiful, and everyone was always there for special occasions, whether they were, you know, special or sad occasions. You know, they were significant things in their life, whether it was death, birthdays, you know, happiness, weddings. There was always something. Someone would come in there with a purpose, and it was my sort of guessing what their purpose is. It became quite interesting, and just making people laugh, I think, gets you somewhere.
Yeah. And you were doing all of these different jobs and sort of keeping up your academics to a certain extent, you explained, where you did sort of a couple of college courses and things. But then you did your first sort of proper job, as it were, in Edinburgh.
Yes. Having gone to college, I went up to Edinburgh. I'd done a secretarial course. So I worked for an architectural company in Edinburgh for a couple of years.
And it shows that by doing all of these different jobs where you've got lots of people skills, that when it comes to actually getting your first proper job, as it were, that you can do that because you've now acquired these generic skills. So it wasn't necessary that you had all of these academics. You were still able to do that.
Definitely. No, I wasn't an academic at all. I still say, actually, both my brothers are academic. I wasn't academic. I say to my children, you know, I was savvy. I think, you know, people are different. I don't think it matters whether you're academic. You know, if you're not the brilliant mathematical scientist that goes to Cambridge, it doesn't matter. You'll have other skills. There'll be other things that you can find in your life. And actually, looking back, I think the only thing I actually was good at school was talking a lot and drama. And probably in my life, I've put those two together and developed a career out of them.
Well, completely. When you came back from Edinburgh, you explained that you needed to get a job in London pretty sharpish. And so it was that confidence and that ability to talk that enabled you to get a job that probably changed the direction of your career. Tell us about that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think as a child, because I was on the stage a lot and I did a lot of acting and drama and I probably did have the confidence to go in. I went into a recruitment company. I'd unfortunately lost my grandmother and was down for a funeral. But I said, I literally have to get a job today to get back up to Scotland and hand in my notice. And they said, you know, it's 11 o'clock. We can't get you a job today. You know, you just have to accept that. And I was just like, I'm sorry. And I probably am still quite determined in that front, in that I think there's always a way to achieve something for a better outcome and to get some progress without just the computer says no. So I said, there must be somebody that is there today that could just see me for some sort of job, whether it's temp, permanent, whatever. And they had this job, and I was 21 at this point, for Reader's Digest, with the magazine of the time for elderly people, in their music department, which was even worse because it was actually a record company, but with the most uncool music when you're 21, you know. All the classical music, you know, Cliff Richard, bless him. Lots of music probably now my generation actually much more into. But at the time, it was not cool at 21. But I got an interview. I was there at 2:30. I got the job. I went back up to Scotland, handed in my notice, and worked for them for about 3 or 4 years.
Well, when you took the job, so a couple of things from that. Number one, it really is worth being pushy and being determined, because then this is a great example of it, where you got what you needed, which was a job. But secondly, it's really worth taking a chance, especially at that age, you know, even if the job doesn't sound like it is the number one, or, you know, centre of your target, to take it anyway, because this then led you to a next step. And you joined this, what you thought was an uncool party, but it sounds like it ended up being incredibly cool.
Actually, it did end up being cool. You know, although the product itself wasn't cool, the skills, the opportunities I had there were amazing. You know, it was a massive American company. I was very young. I was allowed to go into the recording studio with some really, you know, cool radio DJs at the time, like Alan Freeman and Tommy Vance and all sorts of people that were recording. And I was in the studio like we are now. And there's a certain environment about being in a studio that's incredibly exciting. And they were recording, you know, singles that we were using promotionally. I was helping organise events, you know, rock and roll parties. You know, Peter Frampton was there and Bill Wyman, you know, and I was talking to all these people and I was young and they were very famous people, you know, at that time. And they gave me a lot of opportunities. It got me interested in production and advertising and studios and music, really. It performed like a record company. It was a record company.
So it just shows you, you know, you have to take these opportunities because you just never know, do you? You can't know the whole story when you go for an interview for something. You have to sort of get in there and find out.
Exactly.
And then you decided that, so you're having this great time, but you then wanted to sort of back it up with some sort of theory and some academics and some qualifications. So you went off and did some of that in the evening, didn't you?
That's right. Yes, I paid for myself because I was now earning money. To do a certificate in advertising marketing because I was becoming more interested in that side and thinking that maybe I could get a job in advertising, which I ultimately did and worked for an advertising agency.
And after that, you then joined a music company. So tell us a bit more about that.
I joined a music company. I then was able to combine my advertising skills with the music skills I'd developed, and I helped set up a music marketing department for Europe. And that was interesting in that it was product development. We were licensing music from record companies. We were doing copyright. We were designing album covers. We were, you know, getting flown on a private plane I did once with a band to go for lunch to France. You know, it was an exciting time, really. And I was traveling a lot to Europe. You know, I was traveling. This was now, you know, Time Warner. You know, they had big budgets, again, American company.
And I'm sure people from the outside would be looking at you and saying, wow, she's so lucky. But, you know, it was really a question of just putting yourself forward, being determined and taking up the opportunities, but also being quite a self-starter by taking those qualifications. And in fact, you didn't tell your employer when you did those qualifications until the end, did you? And then
what
happened?
Well, I passed and I happened to say to someone I just passed and they said, you said what? How did you do that? And I said, well, I did it, you know, in the evenings and the weekends, and I was up till 1 a.m. at my little desk playing music. And they said, we're going to pay you back. And actually, I'm still moved now. You just think, oh, yeah. That was quite special.
And that's amazing. And that demonstrates that employers really, really want their employees to sort of upskill, because not only is it an asset for the individual, but the more skills and knowledge you have as an employee, you know, the more valuable you are to that employer.
Definitely.
That strengthens the employer themselves. So I'm not at all surprised that they would have paid you for it. But it was certainly a lovely gesture.
It was. It was very kind and very much appreciated, especially, you know, when you're young and not earning that much.
Then you went on to Australia, you went to Hollywood, you literally were all over the place having an amazing time by the sounds of it, and picking out all these skills as well.
Yes, from there I was sent to Australia to help run their video and new business development department, and that was just amazing. It was, you know, I was 28 years old, it was like company flat, company car, you know, help do this, go and meet the record companies, launch films, launch music magazines. I stayed, left Sydney, went to Melbourne, and then worked for Blockbuster, who took over Virgin Megastores at that time. And yes, they sent me to Hollywood when we did the rebranding campaign. There was a big TV commercial, and I was just like, I'm in a famous person's trailer van. It was a bit surreal, really.
I mean, the people that you've met, you did mention a few of them off air. It's amazing. You know, you really have had an insight into that whole world of celebrity. And when we go back to what it was you said you wanted to do when you were 15, journalism, working with celebrities. And what was the other one? Radio,
BBC,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
BBC.
And radio, yeah.
And, you know, you basically started to bring this all together at the end of sort of that exciting sort of corporate career, if you want to call it. You then set up your own business.
I did. When I came back, yes. I'd mentioned, yes, when we were talking about, you know, it does sound name-dropping, some of these names. And I actually had a book. I took a photo of every celebrity or music artist or whatever that I'd... And actually... Used to say, oh, do you want to see my, you know, sort of show-off book when people came around?
Yeah.
It was really cringy. But actually, one of the people that I do regret meeting, and that's what I mentioned earlier, was one of the record companies used to break bands in Australia because I was English-speaking and they have the same, you know, infrastructure retail-wise. Two record companies came out and one said they're breaking this Irish band called The Cause, and they did a thing in a pub that I went to, and we said, yeah, they're okay, yeah, I think they'll go, they'll do quite well. And then another one had this band called Boyzone, and they said, oh, Ronan, this guy Ronan is going to be coming in on Saturday. And I said, actually, I'm not going to work on Saturday, and I gave it to my assistant. And then it's been the biggest regret of my life, like just hanging out with Ronan and the boys on a Saturday morning at the Virgin Megastores. You know, that was work.
How funny!
But I chose not to go in. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, amazing opportunities. You know, and I'm sure that some, even the ones you miss, you know, you've got great stories out of it, haven't you? You then went on to start your own business, and you know, you've really sort of followed the development of media to where we are now, where not only during your career have you been the producer of, you know, content in magazines and bands and books and music, but now you are the producer and presenter of a podcast series as well.
Well, yes, if you look at it like that, it looks like I've very cleverly sort of constructed my entire career. Yeah. But I don't think it works like that. I think you have a fascination and a passion for what you believe in that starts very young. And I think, you know, even you look at, you know, 5-year-olds, they gravitate towards what's really important to them. And I think media and drama and everything was always important to me, and talking and discovery and curiosity. And I think those skills do help in journalism, that you can seek out and think, oh, why are they doing that? That will help. And actually, the podcast came about because, by accident, really, because I was doing the podcast for the BBC for Sound Women, helping women get into broadcast and helping interviewing different people every month. So I themed one on sport and one on voice work and one on, you know, different themes to help women in broadcast. And unfortunately, they ran out of funding, and I was doing a tour at Global, where Heart and LBC and Capital, because I've got a huge passion for radio. And I met someone from Heart FM who worked for Sound Women as well, you know, or was on their team. And we said, what a shame the podcast is closing. Should we do another one? And we said, sure, what should we? And we brainstormed. We had one meeting. We said, let's call it the Influential Women Podcast. We said, why not? We got a friend to do the artwork, which is beautiful if you look at it online. And we said, well, who should we interview? Well, luckily, Sound Women was run by Jane Garvey and Fee Glover. And I said to Jane, please, can you help be my first guest on this podcast with zero listeners or whatever? And she did. And she put a lovely comment on my website. And, you know, that had so many listeners. It was just phenomenal. And amazing. Since then, it's been brilliant. A year to the day, we launched at the Women of the World Festival at South Bank. And a year later, I interviewed Jude Kelly, who was the founder of the Women of the World Festival, who's just gone around the world doing it globally. And I was just so proud, not only helping all these women and smashing all these stigmas and helping with emotive journeys and everything I'm quite passionate about, but that we interviewed the lady who started it, and we only started our baby a year
amazing
before.
Where would you ultimately see this leading? Because a voice is now so critical, isn't it, in the world of PR and marketing.
I've been to a lot of conferences on exactly that subject, actually, because if you look at how media has developed, and actually I never, you know, thought of myself as a media producer or it's all product that has to be delivered to the customer. And it's just the method. You know, when I started out at Reader's Digest, it was on a flimsy, which some of your guys listening won't even know what that is. It was like a 7-inch flimsy vinyl that used to come through the post. And then it went on to cassettes, were massive. I launched those, then DVDs, then video, you know, and all of those are now obsolete.
Yes.
And all of the big companies that did them. And now it's all downloadable formats and it's all online. And that's brilliant because it's exciting every single day with the media format that's coming out.
And it's practically all voice as well, isn't it?
Voice
is
huge.
And you see
voice
appearing everywhere in our world, don't you, very quickly?
Definitely. And the company's investing, you know, it's in the car, it's in the home, it's voice activation. You know, the cars of the future are going to have entertainment centres, the seats are going to face the other way. All of the radio industry forums and discussions and conferences on audio and podcasting all have people from car companies, all have people from Spotify and Google, and, you know, all of the big investors, and they say the future, you know, in car entertainment, the seats will face the other way, the voice will come through, you know, it's Bluetooth already, it's voice activation, it's video, it's multi-platform.
Yeah, and you mentioned in retail as well that their voice will be used to clients.
It already is. You know, there's companies I've spoken to that already have personalised, tailored radio stations in their stores, you know, in banks, in Superdrug.
So masses of potential here, and it's certainly sort of a very new, exciting, developing industry still.
Oh, definitely.
Certainly exciting to access. Now, one of the things I just wanted to talk about briefly before we give some sort of more careers advice about it is the monetization. This particular world is exciting. It could be glamorous. It's certainly an area that people follow when they want to follow a passion, but it's not necessarily always as lucrative as maybe going into finance or something like that, would you say?
Definitely not. I mean, television is much more highly paid than radio. Podcasting is very hard to get funding in the UK, and unless you have a really loyal tribe that follows you, or you're famous and have a massive number of listeners. I mean, you're talking 5, 10, 20,000 listeners to every episode before you can even begin to get a sponsor in the UK. But some of these people that launch, you know, on... within the first week, they can be in the iTunes charts for podcasting, yes, and they can have hundreds of thousands of followers. It's just phenomenal.
I want to move on to our advice, really, for individuals who are excited by what you're saying. Let's take the individuals, first of all, who maybe are still at school, thinking about what to do. They want to do something more academic. What would you suggest to them, first of all?
If I was to go back and wanted to do some broadcast training, I think the colleges really are Goldsmiths and Ravensbourne, and you know, research them all out there. But for media, for multi-platform, for mobile journalism, I went on a one-day course. But they have extensive courses, multi-platform. It's definitely worth getting the right qualifications, which are years of getting, but in order to have the right training, because then you immediately get the sponsorship, the experience in all of those big companies. As
what do you call that, mobile journalism?
I call that mojo, but I don't know if that's
call that mojo.
Finding your mojo, your mobile journalism.
So mobile journalism, if you want to go the academic route and do a degree. But what you were telling me as well was that there are masses of online technical courses people can do.
Oh, I've done one myself. And honestly, if I can do one, anyone can do one. That you literally, I think if you can edit... well, you know, you have producers and presenters and they work together. And actually, although a lot of people would deny it, the presenter actually works for the producer and they get the final say. Obviously, on radio and everything, it's the presenter that gets the following, but it's the producer that calls the shots. And they have multiple producers.
So, Nikki, you mentioned there are a couple of special niches in this particular field. One was sound editing. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. I mean, as I touched on, I'm more the presenter side and work with other producers because I've tried to learn the technical skills and it just doesn't grab me. But if it did, or for anyone that is technical or loves, you know, doing that sort of editing and learning that, the skills of sound editing and sound design particularly are just incredible. That immersive listening, intimate experience that you can have on podcast, on radio, where you tell a story, but you layer it with sound effects and voices and noise and atmosphere, just transports you to another place. That you can earn so much money doing that because it's a skill that not many people have the patience or the know-how to do. And I've met and worked with actually a gold award winning, triple gold award winning sound designer. And her productions are just immersive. Another thing I'd say, if I could just add one more thing, is that female engineering is something that there are massive opportunities with, because all of the women in tech audio broadcasting conferences I've been to, there's probably three women in the room and we all know each other all the time and we all laugh. And there's millions of opportunities because women can do this stuff.
Absolutely.
And actually, they'd be very highly paid and very highly sought after, because engineering is a good thing to do too.
Yeah.
So I would look at sound editing as a skill. I would look at learning how to record on your phone, record on a Mac, record on any device, and to video, and to learn those skills.
And to be self-sufficient. So, you know, even if you're deciding that, if, you know, for whatever reason, the academic route, the university route is not for you, there's still lots of potential to learn these skills online in your own time.
Definitely.
And some of them are really, really cheap, some of these courses.
Really cheap, yes.
Or even free, some of them.
Yeah, and there's discounts on them all the time. You can learn editing, you can learn a lot of these skills, and you can learn how to do a podcast yourself. You can research it. You can just practice doing mobile journalism by whatever you're into. If you're into sport, go down to your local sports field on a Saturday morning and say, do you mind if I ask you a question on your phone and see how it sounds? I listen to the headphones.
And produce it. And as you said,
see where you can put it.
I love what you said about someone, for example, who wants to be a pilot. He has to have a number of hours worth of flying.
That's right.
And what you were saying here with presenting is the same thing, really. You've got to practice.
Yeah. Oh, you
and
have
if you
to
want
practice.
To produce your own content,
definitely.
Practice it, get the hours under your belt. One of the things that you also mentioned, which I found so useful, is that there will be people listening to this who already have another job. Maybe they, you know, they just want to do a career change. They love the sound of what you've just said. They want to get involved. And you were saying you don't necessarily have to leave that particular job. You can do it for your current employer.
Do it for your current employer. You know, be proactive. I think companies enjoy and embrace proactivity. You know, if you say, hey, I've got an idea, you might think it's a dumb idea, they might think it's a dumb idea, it doesn't matter, it might come off. You could say, I work for this company in the high street, can I just record the chief executive telling me about how he got his job, or can I interview some of the customers, can I do a vox pop on the street, can I do something that actually tells some news that might be interesting on the website, on a platform, on YouTube, on video, on your own channel. And women now are phenomenally good at actually putting their voice out there online.
And it's just the current way that marketing is going, isn't it?
Definitely.
And a lot of employers are still not au fait with that. So you bring that to your current employer and suggesting it and just creating something to show the person who can make the decision is the first step of that.
Well, all of these school leavers and uni guys, they know more about the future media than we do. You know, they know how to record on their phone.
Yeah.
They know the apps. They know how to get it online. They know how to get it on YouTube. They know.
So just do it. You don't need to ask anyone's permission, really.
You don't. You're your own producer nowadays.
Yeah. And once you've actually produced something, then you can take that to an organisation that maybe would employ you to do that job.
Yes.
And you've got something to show them, you know, which number one demonstrates your interest, but also your skills as well.
Definitely.
And I know you've definitely done a lot of things for free in the past. And me too.
Oh, loads.
And lots of people that I've interviewed.
Yes.
Is part of this is to develop your skills, but also the other part of it is to produce something that, you're not going to get paid for.
Exactly.
But it's playing the long game, really, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. I mean, that's how I got started in Radio 4 podcasting. I volunteered at my local community radio station.
Yeah.
I read the news. I co-presented the weekend show, all for free. Everyone there was doing it for free, and the passion was just amazing.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are going to be a number of people now that are inspired by what you've said and would want to follow in your footsteps.
Oh,
and I would strongly recommend that you put some of that stuff on your Instagram so that they can have a look. I want to see it. But if they want to come and sort of, you know, present their own scenario to you, ask your advice and pick your brains a little bit, where would be best for them to try and contact you, Nikki?
Of course, either on my website, www.nikkibannerman.co.uk, or on LinkedIn or Instagram.
Perfect. Thanks so much for sharing your time with us today.
Pleasure.
What I've really loved about this interview is your description, not only of your journey, but the actual sort of world of, let's call it, I don't know, audio journalism and voice, because what you've demonstrated is that it's so progressive, and one might look at it and think, oh, well, we've got to where we're going to get to with media.
Definitely.
But what you've outlined is that it's sort of almost just the beginning, and, you know, not only has it gone very, very fast from the times of sort of vinyl to now, but it's going to go even faster. Nikki, thank you so much.
Pleasure.
I've absolutely loved that interview.
Thank you.
It's really
you.
Exciting.
Hope it covered enough,
and I'm sure you've inspired lots of people.
Oh,
this is
so.
Certainly an example of the jobs of the future. So when people say, what should I skill myself for? How should I advise my student? Or how should I advise my child? What should they get ready for? This is certainly one area.
Thank you.
It's been really inspiring.
Oh, thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and found it useful, you can get more of the same, no matter where you are in your career. If you're looking for your first job, there's my book, How to Get Your First Job and Build the Career You Want, available on Amazon. Or if you prefer face-to-face, my company Middleton Murray provides courses to prep you for your new career and then place you into a job. Alternatively, if you prefer online, try my online program, Your Body Means Business, which is more holistic and provides a complete blueprint on how to advance your career, whether you're employed or running your own business, by upgrading your physical and mental fitness and following a complete business blueprint guaranteed for success. That program, I think, is my best yet. So in summary, no matter where you are in your career, starting out, starting again, or just wanting more, we can help. Follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest, where I post daily at Angela Middleton. And subscribe to this channel, as well as my Limitless vlog on YouTube, where you'll see weekly vlogs full of hints and tips for enhanced careers performance. And share this with your friends as well if you think it will help them. Thanks so much for listening.